Let's go ahead. We got Tom with us. Let's get started. Morning, Tom.
Good morning.
So every year, one of our favorite shows is when we get to talk to retired ad man Tom Darbyshire about the Super Bowl ads. Lots to talk about, Tom. Why don't we start, though, with we usually start with this. Tell us a little bit about why do the customers of the advertising agencies, why do they do this? Why do they spend all this money? What are they trying to do?
Well, you know, as we know, there are fewer water cooler events that we all see at the same time and we all talk about these days. The Super Bowl is number one in America for that. Typically, they're trying to do one of three things. Awareness. You have a product people have never heard of before, or a trailer for a new movie that's coming out, or a video game, or a new flavor of Doritos, whatever it is. You just want people to know it exists. So awareness is number one on that list. The second will be consideration. Just being top of mind, reminding people that this is a good day to have some Pringles or Doritos or a particular beer. And often there's a product benefit that comes along with that, that I need what this product does, like mayonnaise makes my sandwiches taste better. Or something intangible, like this product will make me feel sexier or stronger or more confident. And third is brand affinity, which sometimes you're trying to do it at the same time, but sometimes it's your only goal, which is to say, I like this brand. They made me laugh or cry or feel proud, or they stood for something that I believe in, and I'm going to have a good feeling about them, and I'm going to choose Pepsi over Coke purely because of a vibe.
Or because I like polar bears.
Exactly.
And we'll get back to the polar bears. I like to start with that, Tom, because the next thing I'd like to start with is a little bit about what it takes to make one of these ads. You know, what's the process look like, and what does the money look like?
Well, the money is extraordinary. Just for a day of shooting, and no commercial uses less than one day of shooting, you're talking at least $500,000 just to have the crew show up. And they show up with everything that you have to have to make a major motion picture. You're just making a very short one. But most of the commercials you see on the bowl are 2, sometimes 3-day shoots. But the real money comes in not just in the shooting and the finishing, which is could be another $500,000. But these days, celebrities are just, you know, wall to wall on the bowl. And you're going to pay every one of those celebrities $1 million minimum, I would guess, sometimes more. And then often you're also buying the property that you associate that celebrity with. If you're doing a spoof on the Wizard of Oz or Seinfeld, you may have to pay those properties to actually do that. We saw the a Jurassic Park take off yesterday. So you got to pay the studio, you got to pay everybody associated with that property just to be able to use it.
That's okay, a lot.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, when you consider that you're going to spend $10 million for a 30-second spot, you know, the production, if you don't have a good spot, then what's the point of spending the $10 million? I will say Coinbase got off pretty cheap yesterday. They probably made that for $10,000. but I'm not sure they got their $10 million worth of value out of it.
Okay. With that, Tom, let's get your take on what were the big trends. What did you see this year that was significant in terms of how things are changing and where things are going?
Well, an interesting development is that advertisers, after fleeing to digital, where they were promised that every penny you spend will be trackable and we can prove that it actually converted to a sale, they're actually moving back to TV. Partly because we now have more ad-supported streaming services where you're streaming a show, but you have to watch the ads. And it's almost like going back to the 1950s when we only had 2 or 3 stations and you might not have gotten reception on all of them. And you watched the advertisements. You just sat there and watched them. And then we got into the being able to click back and forth between the channels. And then we got into being able to time shift them. And then we got into being able to stream them. And suddenly nobody's watching any ads. But I think the ad-supported streaming, which a lot of people sign up for, is helping create a resurgence of TV advertising. Tech companies definitely are dominating the Super Bowl now. I counted 5 for AI systems, 2 for web builders, 3 for food delivery platforms, 4 for real estate platforms, 1 for crypto. So it used to be all about cars and soda beer. And beer and chips. And now we've got tech. car truck advertising continues to decline. I saw fewer stunts this year, the sort of thing where they expect you to shoot a QR code while you're watching a commercial and then participate in some sort of treasure hunt or something. Thank goodness. Sports betting has become almost part of the programming as opposed to being advertising. Celebrity, of course, remains the rule, not the exception. Multiple celebrities in every spot, sometimes completely unrelated. There were two different brands had Sofia Vergara yesterday. Two different brands had Jeff Goldblum. I'd say the overall mix is fairly typical. About 10% are talking to your head in a rational way. 20% are talking to your heart with some heart-tugging nice message. 70% are aiming for your funny bone. So humor continues to dominate. Though I think we're staying away from serious subjects and causes in this polarized era, but really very few of the commercials made me suddenly laugh out loud. A lot of cleverish banter, but really only one spot that had a surprising reveal. That was the one with the singing toilets. It's like nobody knows how to tell a joke anymore.
I got to say that singing toilets one's that just didn't work for me.
Interesting. I actually liked it because I was intrigued. It set up a mystery, like, where the heck is this going?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I liked the fact that even though it was a lowbrow concept, they did a very sort of highbrow, straight-faced execution of it with the song Take a Look at Me Now. Mm-hmm. And then a payoff that actually sort of made sense that, you know, if it looks too yellow, then you need to hydrate more and we've got the product for you. So I actually kind of thought that was pretty smart. I'd say other trends, diversity as a goal in itself. There have been commercials in the past where that was what they were celebrating. We're seeing everybody pull back from that. Some spots had almost none. The exception, I thought, was the NFL itself. Mm-hmm. With the spots that it did, which almost feel like public service spots, they really went all in on celebrating diversity and telling everyone that they matter. And then the choice of Bad Bunny for the halftime show, all in Spanish, was very daring on their part. Overall, I'd say quality was down this year, though there was one spot that I thought was one of the best ones I've seen in a few years.
And that takes us to a natural segue. Which one wins the Tom Darbyshire Grand Prize for Super Bowl ads?
Well, the clear winner for me was the Budweiser Freebird spot. Some people will find it sappy, but I can tell you what happened. The creative team on that looked back to see what Clydesdale spots had done really well in the past. Last year, there was one with the Clydesdale foal who, when the beer keg falls off the truck, noses it and rolls it all the way to the bar, saving the day. We like stories about children more than we like stories about adults. And in this case, it's a child horse. And if you look back at the all-time winner of Clydesdale spots, it was one set in the barnyard again, in which a donkey wishes he was a Clydesdale. So it's an ugly duckling story. Mm-hmm. So yesterday, we had a foal in an ugly duckling story with literally an ugly bird, which is the little, you know, chick that he finds, and then nurses and teaches to fly in that amazing transition shot where it's like the winged Pegasus flying over the camera to reveal the bald eagle, which was, I think, an unexpected surprise. I thought it was touching, inspiring. I think the creative team did a beautiful job with it. And I think it wrapped Budweiser in the flag, you know, a brand that got bought by non-Americans some years ago, which caused them some bad press. And I thought it did it in a way that didn't feel terribly political. And then they saved it with the little, sun got in my eyes thing from the farmer. So I'd say bravo. That to me is a spot that would go in my Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that tracking shot with which looks like Pegasus, you know, it's just such a dramatic thing. It was fabulous.
Beautiful.
What else did you like?
I thought that the device that the Claude spots used of taking AI and embodying it as a physical person that you're talking to was really smart. I actually think the one that ran pregame, which was a 60, with the therapist, was much funnier than the one he ran during the bowl, which was the guy doing some chin-ups and then talking to his trainer. But I think it's a smart device, and I think it was a really interesting strategy when they said ads are coming to AI, but not to Claude, and we've just given you a demonstration of why you don't want ads in your AI. So I thought that was smart. I have to say, I'm generally not big on bathroom humor, but having already gone in on the singing toilet bowl spots, I thought the relax your tight end spot was pretty well done, because it took a sort of a lowbrow joke, but treated it with great dignity. And I have to say, my favorite bit of copywriting on the whole Super Bowl was the term finger-free prostate screening, which I think comes home for a lot of men. And I thought that though, just the way that they did it of taking the football tight ends in full uniform, but putting them in these unexpected situations, was a great mystery and paid off well and delivered with a straight face. So I like that one. The Rocket Mortgage, Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Mr. Rogers song sung by Lady Gaga, story of two tween girls who move to a neighborhood, don't have any friends, they become friends, and the neighbors start helping each other out. And the overall message was neighborliness is good, be a good neighbor, coming from a company that in the past has told us about how they can get you an answer on your mortgage quicker and how their rates are lower. And so they really rose from just talking product features to talking about a larger benefit of a happier life in the right house, which we can help put you in.
You know, on the nurture theme, which I think was the Clydesdale theme, the other one I really liked on the nurture side was the Lay's potato ad, which was the sort of continuation of the family farm.
I think you're right on that. I do believe the one last year where the little girl, it was the same story as the last year's Clydesdale spot. The little girl gets the potato that falls off the truck, and she plants it and tends to it and grows up potatoes, and which then get made into Lay's potato chips. And their strategy is quite simple. They, you know, in this day of processed foods being vilified, Lay's wants to remind you that, you know, it's just a potato with some oil and some salt, and it comes directly from these family farms, all of which is true. So I thought last year's was a better rendition of it, but it was interesting that they made a complete sequel, including scenes from last year's spot in this year's spot, as now the little girl has grown up and the dad is handing the family farm down to her, and she throws a nice retirement party for him. It was sweet.
And then they continued later in the game and said you get your Lay's potato chips within 72 hours from being a potato to being a potato chip.
Yeah, it's a stunt that they're doing. It's a special promotion, limited time offer, but it's, you know, it's designed to make that point that from farm to your lips, you know, is a very direct route without a lot of processing and middlemen.
It was almost as though they were saying that it's not processed. You know, it's 72 hours, so therefore it's fresh food. It seemed that way.
Well, I actually worked on the Lay's account and did commercials just like, you know, that. The one with the little girl and the potato, because people do, if you ask people, are potato chips processed, they will say absolutely, they're terribly processed, it's junk food, you should never eat them. But when you go down to Lay's, the scientists down there say, well, there are fewer foods in the grocery market that are simpler than us. We take potatoes, we wash them, we cut them, we fry them, we salt them, we stick them in the bag. That is it.
So there were you mentioned that you worked on the Lay's account at one time. There was another ad. I want to talk about the Pepsi ad, and I wanted and the sort of polar bears, and what your take on that was, and how it sort of fits into the history of Pepsi's advertising approach.
Absolutely, I worked on the Pepsi account for over a dozen years during what I would say was the golden age of Super Bowl advertising. You need some history for this one to really understand the backstory. Prior to 1975, there was Coke, and then there were a bunch of other small regional colas. Pepsi did a little research, which showed that if you gave enough people a blind taste test, Pepsi would win by this tiny margin. So they created the Pepsi Challenge, a way to act like they were on the same level as Coke. And it was absolute genius. It worked so well that Coke blinked and actually changed the formula of Coke and introduced New Coke, which at first was a disaster. People were just distraught that their Coke had gone away, even though in taste test, it actually would win over the old Coke. But Pepsi, and in fact, Coke blinked and brought back Classic Coke.
Classic.
Which actually turned out they ended up having higher sales after it was all over than when they started. Who would have ever predicted that? But Pepsi found this great formula of continuing to do taste tests and continuing to always tweak Coke. You never see Coke tweaking Pepsi. It always runs in one direction. We had the account at that time, and we did a spot called Diner, in which a delivery driver for Coke and a delivery driver for Pepsi find themselves side by side on diner stools on Christmas Eve, and they make friends with each other, and they let each other sample the cola that they're drinking. And when the Coke driver tries a Pepsi for the first time, there's this little moment where he sort of refuses to give it back. You cut to the outside of the diner. A chair comes flying through the window. A fight ensues. It was beautifully done. Won the Super Bowl. Number one spot. The next year, our agency did another Super Bowl winning spot called Security Camera. It was actually shot from a security camera in a like a 7-Eleven. And you see the Coke driver, same driver, loading the shelves at a convenience store. After he puts in all the Cokes, he takes a Pepsi, sneaks a sip of it, and then goes to actually put it back in the cooler, at which point the shelves in the cooler break. Thousands of cans come flooding into the store. Terribly embarrassing. Wins the Super Bowl. And then, for reasons I won't go into, we lost the account. And Pepsi never made a spot that even made the top 10 again. Now, this year, BBDO, that agency, won the account back. There's no one there left from those old days, but you can see that the new team studied those old spots fanatically. So you can just see how they decide to have Coke's polar bear, almost like Coke's driver, pick a Pepsi in a blind taste test, which is something they have a tradition of, and then become comically distraught. He goes to see a shrink. He wanders the streets in despair until he meets a lady polar bear who also likes Pepsi. And then the two of them get caught on a concert cam drinking Pepsi, which is a gag I actually missed at first. This is a takeoff on the Coldplay thing. Yeah, and I have to say my daughter had to clue me in on that. So I think it's a great premise. It's better than anything Pepsi has done in years. I don't think it rises to the level of the old spot. So the account is back, but the magic is not quite all back.
I think part of the problem that you just identified is you had to get a couple of jokes in a very short amount of time. You had to focus on the fact that there was an allusion to the old Coke Pepsi thing. You had to focus on the fact that it was a Coldplay joke. It was a good Coldplay joke, I will say.
Yeah.
But anyway, a lot going on.
So if I was the creative director on that, I might have said, look, we got one really good joke here, which is that somehow the polar bear ends up taking a taste test and picks Pepsi. Right. How can we make that the funniest thing it could be, as opposed to doing that in the first 3 seconds and then it just being gag after gag after that?
But didn't the entire commercial rest upon the fact that you had to understand that the polar bear represented Coke? I mean, I didn't know that.
That's interesting that you miss it. Coke has been using the polar bears every year, particularly at Christmas, for probably a decade now.
Okay.
So I think that they have built a legacy. they have built an asset in the polar bear that belongs to them, much in the way that the Clydesdale belongs to Budweiser.
Right.
We talked about... Go ahead.
And so Pepsi was able to kind of steal that legally?
Coke doesn't own polar bears. I mean, they could always sue, but they wouldn't because they never tweak Pepsi. Okay. Pepsi only tweaks Coke.
Gotcha.
We've talked about celebrities. I want to talk about two celebrity-filled ads and sort of get your take on both of them. One of them was the Dunkin' Donuts ad, and one of them was the Jurassic Park ad, and I frankly came away with very different impressions on them.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who love the Dunkin' stuff just because they like the characters, and there's a few good banterish gags in there, and it's filled with a lot of stupid fun. I find them to be total head-scratchers. I just don't even know what it's about. I don't even know where to start to evaluate those commercials. Even going back to the original ones with the Dung Kings, which was a takeoff on a dumb rap group for Rhett Duncan, the most interesting thing about that was that they actually made those tracksuits that the guys were wearing and sold them, and they were a huge hit on the internet. So this year's spot, it was so expensive. So many 80s celebrities and 80s sitcom gags all stuffed into one spot. But I just didn't know how to feel about it. And I just felt like I was confused.
I thought it was a whiff, right? In the sense that you just saw cameo after cameo. It was like they were hitting you over the head with, look how many stars we could recruit and make look young.
Yeah, how much can we cram into this time?
Now, we do remember, that it was Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, it might have been, annoying to us to watch, but, we had the one that had George Clooney in it. I couldn't tell you what that product was.
Yeah, well, I think you're right there. Part of that is that we now have Ben Affleck associated with Dunkin' for three or four years. He's their polar bear. And he has done some other spots for them. So that's true. I think you've got a point there. Plus, this one happened to be set in a Dunkin' Donuts itself. Having a conversation there helped.
Yeah.
Talk about the Jurassic Park ad, which I loved.
Yeah. Clearly, using some AI to take those characters and recreate them or make them look younger if they had any of the actors do their actual parts. To me, it was really smart in that had they had the Xfinity router, none of this mess would have ever happened, and it would just be a wonderful theme park. That's a smart idea. The one problem with it is that things going right is never as interesting or funny as things going wrong. FedEx made a whole universe of spots about what happens when you don't use FedEx, and they were some of the funniest commercials ever made. Having been down that road over and over of, you know, the client wants a funny spot, but they want to show their product saving the day at the same time, really hard to do.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the best FedEx ads that I remember involved Army men who had to be delivered overnight, and I believe you had something to do with that ad. Am I right, Tom?
That spot not only got me nominated for a primetime Emmy, it was also called one of the gayest commercials of the decade by Planet Out magazine. it was about G.I. Joe characters who had to be shipped wearing doll's dresses rather than combat uniforms because the shipment didn't arrive from China on time. It was utterly ridiculous. And we double shot the commercial once with the characters completely naked, and once because the client wanted a fallback in case they got in trouble, and the other one with them completely dressed in drag. And we actually finished it both ways, and then we all agreed that the soldiers in drag was much funnier.
I want to ask you about another one that bothered me was the Sweet Caroline Hellman's ad.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. What a mess. And Hellman's has now done 2 or 3 years in a row, just dreadfully corny spots with slapstick humor. I think we did see a trend in this Super Bowl of using a lot of music. Some people used it well, where you took the song, the original song, and let it mean something, help the commercial mean something, like using Free Bird for Budweiser. But then we had a number of spots where they took a jingle and rewrote all the lyrics, or not a jingle, they took a famous pop song. They took a much beloved famous pop song and totally rewrote the lyrics to be all of the product features that the client is trying to cram in. And then because that is such a dreadful thing to do, several of them tried to pass it off as being a so dumb it's good parody. I think we saw a couple of those glam rock parodies. We had the one for Halfway There Insurance instead of State Farm. You're living on a prayer with anybody else. I mean, just living on a prayer as an idea for buying the wrong insurance, that works. But to take a great song and rewrite it with dumb lyrics and then fill it with dumb scenes, to me, it just ends up being dumb. And it's interesting that we've seen some advertisers do this year after year. That's T-Mobile. T-Mobile has now done 3 years in a row of exactly this formula. And I like them less every year.
And I suppose you're going to say, tell me why they keep doing that. Tom, last, I want to talk on a couple of losers. What else didn't you like before we go?
In that same category of companies inexplicably using the same formula, the Nerds gummy spot with that giant red gummy, which, this would give me nightmares. And then Ritz doubled down on their salty people using salty language on Ritz Island. If it didn't work the first time, why did you think it would work the second time? Another spot that totally flummoxed me was the processed food kills spot with Mike Tyson. I even had to look it up to find out who the heck is this. It's the Maha Center, Inc., which seems to be a nonprofit, though it's run by the publisher of RFK's books. I'll give it points for being attention-getting. Certainly a provocative choice of spokesperson, Mike Tyson, a well-documented history of sexual assault, physical violence, abusive behavior, including a 1992 rape conviction, but now an authority on nutrition, apparently. And the spot includes a link to realfood.gov, which is a government website. All of it just weird, very off-putting, certainly did not want me to go eat an apple.
What did you think of the Emma Stone ad?
Again, I thought it was a miss, an interesting business pivot on the part of Squarespace, unlike Wix, who just said, you know, here's how you can use our product to create a web space for your business. They weren't selling websites this year. They were selling domain names, which I guess is a kind of a cash cow. They get you to sign up for your domain name, and then you have to pay every year to maintain it. So I thought that it was simple in that it was her being angry about not being able to get her domain name, but it wasn't very likable. Shot by, you know, Yorgos Lanthimos, who does all her edgy films like Begonia and The Lobster and The Favorite. But I thought that was a pretty good premise there. Couldn't you have done a really funny spot about all the other Emma Stones out there? That would have been fun.
Yeah. But it was pretty. All right, Tom, we look forward to doing this every year. Thanks so much for spending time with us. Hope we get you back next year.
Absolutely.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks. We've been talking to Tom Derbyshire, retired ad executive from BBDO. We'll be right back after this.